been led to believe. "Shouldn't have what?" Toby asked, then saw what I was looking at. "Oh." "I know," I said, trying not to stare, but then giving up on that immediately. Clark's arms were muscular, his abs were defined, and his shoulders were much broader than I'd realized now that they were out in the open and not hidden under one of his t-shirts. I was suddenly rethinking my clothes policy. Clark and Tom walked up to our spot and tossed their boards down onto the sand, both of them talking fast, overlapping each other. "Not cool, man," Tom said, brushing his wet hair back. "You can't just knock someone into the water like that. I could have died."
"How could you have died?" Clark asked, laughing.
"Lots of ways," Tom said. "Like, if I'd inhaled water, or if there had been a jellyfish." He trailed off, then turned to his girlfriend. "Palmer?"
"I'm with Clark. I think you were fine, babe."
"It's not my fault,"
Clark said, as he looked around squinting.
"I couldn't see anything. It was an accident."
"Sure,"
Tom said, coming to sit next to Palmer.
"Likely story."
Clark headed toward me, still squinting, and I pulled his glasses out from where I'd been holding them for him in my beach bag. "This way," I called, holding up my hand.
"Walk toward my voice."
Clark made his way over, and I handed him his glasses as he sat down next to me.
"So much better," he said when he put them on.
He smiled at me.
"Like, now I can see the most beautiful girl on the beach."
I rolled my eyes behind my sunglasses.
"Stop it,"
I said, even though I didn't want him to. It was the kind of thing I would have found beyond cheesy with any of my exes, but it was different coming from Clark. I leaned over to meet him for a quick kiss, feeling the sand on his arms and tasting the faint flavor of seawater on his lips.
"Sorry to interrupt," Toby said, looking at me and Clark with her expression somewhere between annoyed and wistful.
"What's up?" I asked, gesturing for her to pass me the bag of chips we were sharing.
"I was just wondering if Wyatt said anything about me."
Toby handed me the bag and looked back out to the water, where Wyatt was standing on his board, balancing on one foot for a moment before wobbling and falling off. It looked like he was doing paddleboard yoga, which seemed like a terrible idea all around.
"Like when you guys were having guy talk?"
"Sorry," Clark said. It hadn't taken him long to pick up on her massive crush, and Wyatt's complete lack of interest.
"I think you need to move on," Palmer said gently, and Tom, sitting behind her, nodded.
"Because you're awesome, and if Wyatt can't see that, it's his loss."
"Maybe he just can't see it yet," Toby said, sitting up a little straighter. "It's like this in all the movies. You can't see what's been right in front of you the whole time until it's the right moment."
I exchanged a look with Bree, who just shook her head quickly, telling me to let this go.
"Maybe," I said, but even I could hear it hadn't been all that convincing.
"Wasn't there a guy at the museum who liked you?" Tom asked.
"Maybe he already can see what's been in front of him. Like, maybe he's already at the end of the movie."
"But I don't like him," Toby pointed out, her voice slow and clear, like all of us just weren't understanding this. She shook her head.
"I swear to God, I'm..."
"You're not cursed," Bree said, without even looking up.
"Who's cursed?"
I looked up and saw Wyatt, standing by Bree's towel, holding his paddleboard and dripping wet.
"Nobody," Toby said, giving me a look that I knew meant I shouldn't say anything to contradict her. Clark was just talking about his, dragon book.
Right, Clark said quickly with a nod. That's me. Dragons and curses. That's what my books are all about.
Wyatt nodded and then shook the water off his hands so that they dripped on Bree's bare back.
Hey, Bree said, looking around and then pushing herself up. What's going...
She scrambled to her feet.
Wyatt!
What? He said, shaking more droplets on her. Sure you don't need to cool off?
I'm fine,
Bree said, laughing as she pushed him away. I leaned over Clark and turned his wrist so that I could see his watch. It was black and chunky. You could apparently scuba dive with it. And it had taken me a little over a week to be able to tell time on it. And I should get going, I said with a sigh.
Already?
Clark asked, and I nodded. Duty calls, I said, then arched an eyebrow at him.
What do you say? Want to walk some dogs with me?
Seriously? Bree asked, looking around at all of us. I'm really the only one who thinks that sounds dirty?
I heard it this time, Palmer said, nodding. She frowned at me. Keep it clean, you guys. There are children here.
We'll try, Clark said, getting to his feet and, unfortunately, pulling on his t-shirt.
Did you see my moves?
Wyatt asked Bree as he flopped down in the sand next to her, despite the fact that Toby had moved so far over on her towel to make space for him, she'd forced Tom onto the sand.
By moves, do you mean falls? Bree asked. Because those really were impressive.
Wyatt laughed and made an obscene gesture at her, which Bree returned.
It's because the water was too deep,
he said, pushing his wet hair back.
If we were in a pool, it would be different.
He looked around at us.
Any of you acquire a pool since last year?
Tom shook his head. And Wyatt shrugged, like he was letting it go, when Clark said, sounding just a little bit nervous,
I've got a pool.
Everyone looked over at him, eyes lighting up, and I felt my stomach sink. I tried silently to tell him to walk this idea back, pretend he thought they meant billiards, that it was under construction, anything. Because I knew my friends. They were pool-hungry maniacs with no sense of politeness at all when it came to using one.
Really?
Toby asked, smiling at Clark, then glaring at me. And why is this the first time we're hearing about it?
It's just... Clark hesitated. I mean, it's not my house. It's my responsibility for the summer, so I didn't want anything to happen to it. Wait,
Wyatt said, raising an eyebrow.
You live there alone?
Yeah, Clark said, and I fought the urge to bury my face in my hands. This, Palmer said, grinning, is awesome.
Thanks for the invite, brother,
Wyatt said, hitting Clark on the back as Tom winced in sympathy.
Party at Clark's tonight?
Text us the address?
Bree asked, and I nodded, knowing there was no way to get him out of it now. I glanced at my phone and realized I really did need to get going. One of my dogs, Wendell, had a tendency to gnaw on door frames when I was running late. I gathered up the rest of my things, pulling my sundress over my bikini and stepping into my flip-flops.
So, I'll see you guys tonight,
Clark said, starting to leave, taking the beach bag from me and slinging it over his shoulder.
I'll, get some snacks, like chips, maybe?
He turned to me and I nodded, reaching out my hand for his and giving it a squeeze as I realized that this was probably the first party he'd ever thrown.
And Toby?
She looked up at him from where she'd surreptitiously been putting on lip gloss.
For every curse, there's a cure. You know that, right?
Wyatt looked over at him, frowning, and Clark added quickly,
It's a thing in my books, you know, with the dragons.
We should go, I said quickly, feeling the need to avert my eyes from Toby's expression and how hopeful she suddenly looked.
Tell me their names again,
Clark said as he looked at the five dogs in front of us.
Well, that one's Birdie.
Birdie was currently running circles around Clark, who was trying to entangle himself in what was pretty much a perpetual loop.
Thanks for that,
Clark said, wobbling slightly as Birdie lunged for a squirrel. And that's Rufus, I said, pointing to the terrier mix who was chewing his own leg. Jasper, Pippa, and Wendell.
Whatever happened to Rover and Spot?
I'm walking them later tonight, I said, and Clark laughed. He leaned down to kiss me, and I kissed him back, hoping that the five dogs on their leashes would keep calm for a few moments. It had taken me 3 weeks, but I was finally getting the hang of this dog-walking thing. My car now had towels spread over the back seat and was stocked with treats and water and collapsible bowls. I could tell the difference now between a dog sniffing with purpose and just trying to stall and look at a squirrel a little longer. I'd found my favorite brand of plastic bag, orange, biodegradable, from Raiders of the Lost Bark, whose name thrilled Bree to no end. She'd almost lost it when I'd told her about their other business, Temple of Groom. I had learned that my sweetest dog was Waffles the Pit Bull, and the most ornery one was Trixie the Bichon, who looked like the meekest dog ever, just a white ball of fluff. But it was all a facade. She was the alpha, and would growl down dogs who outweighed her by 100 pounds. I'd learned that the big dogs were usually pretty happy to roll with things, while it was the little ones who were the most stubborn. I'd found out the hard way what happened when you were walking 6 dogs and a cat streaked across the road. I knew that Lloyd always wanted to smell the flowers, but if you let Leon do it, he'd sneeze for the rest of the walk. And I discovered that Birdie seemed to have no sense of how time worked. If he saw a squirrel in a tree, he'd run back to that same tree every day, like the squirrel would have been waiting there that whole time.
Bert Springs Eternal,
Clark had dubbed it. But mostly, I began to realize that I was good at this. And there was a feeling of accomplishment when I drove back after a walk with a dog in the passenger seat and 3 dogs in the back. Everyone tired and happy and panting out the windows. A feeling I'd done something that I'd never felt in any of my internships or summer programs before this.
Remind me where we were,
Clark said, when we broke apart. He gestured for me to give him another leash, and after a moment's consideration, I gave him Rufus. I knew he and Birdie got along. Our saga of Marjorie and Carl had continued to expand, taking quite a few twists and turns. The fact that Marjorie originally intended to kill Carl had pretty much been quietly forgotten by both of us, and I was always trying to give the road bandits they encountered some kind of ailment that I would then try to get Marjorie to diagnose. Despite Clark always vetoing this. Clark had started today's installment in earnest when we'd picked up Pippa, but almost right from the start, I'd had issues with his current direction. I was telling you that Marjorie wouldn't say that, I reminded him.
Oh, right.
Well, I think she would. It makes sense for the story.
Ugh,
I said. Not going to happen. She's not going to get up and admit to everyone in a crowded tavern how she feels about Carl. I realized that Wendell was in danger of getting tangled with Pippa and switched him over to my other hand.
Why not? I think it's important.
Why does she need to tell everyone how she feels about him? Isn't it enough that Carl knows?
Does he, though?
Lark asked, raising an eyebrow at me.
Do you think it really counts unless other people hear it?
Of course, I said immediately. Probably more so. Lark shook his head, then stumbled a few feet as Rufus and Birdie lunged simultaneously for a squirrel that was running up a nearby tree.
Why do you think people get married with lots of guests there?
Probably for the toaster ovens.
You might be right. But I think it's more than that. I think there's something to saying it in front of people. It's like it means more when you say it out loud, where everyone can hear you.
Fine, I said, relenting. I was starting to learn when Clark wasn't going to let go of something, and I wanted to get to what happened next.
Marjorie confesses all to random tavern folk.
I looked over at him, wondering if I might be able to get something I'd been pushing for now that I'd given in to this. Can we finally do my thing where Marjorie discovers penicillin?
I told you there's no penicillin in this world.
But there's mold, right? Maybe Marjorie's just smarter than everyone else. Clark smiled at me.
You make a good point,
he said, pulling me in for a kiss as all around us dogs barked and leashes got hopelessly tangled. You okay? I asked, looking across the table at my dad, who was staring down at his plate, his expression concerned.
Maybe,
he said, after a slight pause, picking up a chopstick and nudging a piece of sushi.
I'm not entirely sure what this is, though.
I shook my head as I dunked my vegetable tempura in soy sauce. I can't help you there. I'd finished walking the dogs and said goodbye to Clark, who seemed to be taking his party-throwing responsibilities way too seriously, and had headed to the store to buy provisions and two kinds of dip, when I got a text from my father asking if I felt like getting dinner. We weren't all meeting up at Clark's until later, and I'd been surprised to realize that, in fact, I did feel like it. Our two-dinner-a-week plan was officially in full swing now that I was no longer grounded. It wasn't like we hadn't been eating dinner when I'd been stuck at home every night, but it had been much more casual. My dad would eat in front of an 80s basketball game, and sometimes I'd join him in his study with my own plate, looking up facts about the game on my phone and irritating him by being able to call what happened next and pretend I was just really good at guessing. Or we'd both be in the kitchen together, me with my organic chemistry textbook, I was trying to get ahead for next year, him with the paper or one of the nonfiction books he was always reading about things like the history of salt or tires. We would eat in silence that didn't feel strained, and talk only if we had something to say. But when he'd suggested sushi tonight, it had felt okay. It had actually seemed like a good idea. Well, at least until my dad had gotten his food. Why did you order that? I asked, as a waiter came out with two more plates, set them on either side of my dad, frowning down at the rolls still untouched on the plate in front of my father, like he wasn't eating fast enough. I'd gotten what I always got at sushi places, where not liking fish was a definite handicap. But my dad had ordered Chef Knows Best, which meant he didn't get a choice in anything, but things were brought out to him and he was expected to eat them. In other words, pretty much my worst nightmare. My dad picked up a roll with his chopstick, then set it down and took a drink of his sake, like he was trying to get up the courage to take a bite.
Well,
he said, looking across the table at me.
It was what your mom always liked to do when she had the option.
Oh. We had started talking about her slowly, in little pieces here and there, but I still wasn't used to it yet. She did?
Yeah,
my dad said, picking up the roll again and eating it this time, but taking a long drink when it was over, so I didn't think I really needed to ask him how it was.
She used to say that normally everyone is telling the chef what they want. She thought it was nice to switch it up for a change.
I smiled and picked up a carrot just as two more plates arrived, the waiter starting to look seriously peeved. My dad must have picked up on this as he started to eat more quickly.
So, any big plans tonight?
He asked, wincing slightly as he chewed. Oh, I said, just a stall. I had a feeling that telling him I was going over to Clark's house, where there would be no supervision, and if Wyatt was involved, there would probably be beer, would not go over so well. I think I might just have a quiet night at Breeze, I said, with what I hoped was a casual shrug. Watching movies, you know.
Uh-huh,
my dad said as he looked around, then dropped a napkin over the sushi remaining on his plate. He gave me an even look.
So I take it you won't be seeing a certain novelist?
Well, I said, stalling. I mean, who can say, really, what will or will not happen? My dad laughed at that, surprising me.
I think you could have a future in politics, kid, he said, shaking his head. Well, when you do see Clark.
If, I mean, it's a possibility.
Tell him I have something I want to discuss with him.
I set down my chopsticks and looked across the table at him. It was one thing for my father to start acting a little more like a dad. It was quite another for him to have the, what are your intentions with my daughter, conversation. What's that?
It's about his book. He just introduces this whole new concept, this luminosity thing, right as the first one ends. I'm going out tomorrow to get the second one.
Wait, you read his book? My dad nodded and laid his chopsticks across his plate.
I thought I should check them out. It really is impressive that he's a published author. It's quite an accomplishment for someone your age.
I nodded, figuring it might be best not to point out that Clark had actually written the first one when he was 3 years younger than I currently was. So, was it good? My dad looked at me in surprise.
You haven't read them?
I'm getting around to it, I muttered, as I took a drink of my Diet Coke, not sure if I could explain why I hadn't yet. I was pretty sure the reason, well, one of them, was that when Clark and I were just hanging out, it was like I could forget he had this whole other life, where he was a professional author with a job and a tax return, who lots of people on the internet were mad at.
It was great, and it's not the kind of thing I usually read.
My dad looked at me for a moment, then raised his eyebrows.
What would you think about having the next dinner at home?
Sounds good.
And why don't you bring Clark?
He went on, so smoothly that I realized I just walked into his trap. There was, after all, a reason my dad had been successful in politics for most of his professional life.
If you're spending time with him, I would like to get to know him.
I quickly scrolled through possible excuses, but realized my dad had skillfully painted me into a corner. I couldn't say that Clark was busy because he'd left the date open. Knowing I'd been bested, I nodded. I'll ask. I thought of something and looked up at him, eyes narrowing. Is this actually because you want to get to know him, or because you want to ask him about the luminosity thing? My dad shrugged as he signaled for the check.
You know, he said with a smile. Two birds, one stone.
3 hours later, I sat on one of the lounge chairs by the pool, with Birdie, who had seemed thrilled by all the unexpected company, flopped across my legs. I'd never spent much time around Clark's pool. The only time I'd ever been in his backyard was when Birdie had managed to make it outside during his favorite game, Run from the Lady with the Leash. But now that I was out here, I could see it was lovely, landscaped and carefully designed, with lounge chairs placed at exact intervals. The lounge chairs were white and beige striped, which matched the striped towels that were rolled up in baskets placed around the pool deck. Basically, this looked like the kind of pool people had when they never used their pool, which was certainly not the case now. Wyatt had spent most of the night floating around on a pool raft, looking like he wasn't planning to move a muscle, lulling everyone into a sense of complacency. And then he had started a stealth dunking campaign. He would begin a conversation with you, and then just when you'd let your guard down, he would dunk you unexpectedly. After he'd gotten me twice in a row, I'd gotten out. Wyatt now seemed determined to dunk Bree, despite the fact that Toby was pretty obviously putting herself in his path. Clark was sitting in the hot tub, and Tom and Palmer were currently making out on the diving board. My phone buzzed on the lounge chair next to me, and I picked it up, frowning, when I saw it was from Toby. Toby. Swimmer, boy, pointing down, water splashing, crying face, crying face, crying face. I looked over to where she was standing by the overstocked food table. But she was not meeting my eye, and I had a feeling she didn't want people meaning Wyatt, to know we were texting about this. Me. You're sad because Wyatt's not dunking you? Toby. Thumbs up, bullseye, sad face. Me. I'm sorry, T. I looked up from my phone and over at Toby. And she gave me a small, sad shrug before she walked to the other side of the pool with a handful of chips, dangling her feet in the water near where Wyatt was currently floating on his back, her expression wistful. After a few moments, I saw Bree look around for her. She swam over, pushed herself out of the water, and sat next to Toby on the edge of the pool. After a second, I saw Toby smile and shove Bree's shoulder. And Bree shoved her back, both of them laughing now.
Hey,
Lark said, grabbing a towel from the towel basket, and I enjoyed my second look at his abs in one day as he walked over and sat on the lounge chair next to mine, since Birdie was taking up the remainder of the free space on mine.
Do you think people are having fun? Is there enough food?
It's great, I assured him. I just hope you realize what you've done.
What's that?
You know how you're never supposed to feed stray cats because then they'll never leave?
Or put a salt lick out for a deer,
he said, nodding. Right, I said. Lark looked at me blankly, and I nodded out to the pool, where Palmer was now cannonballing into the water, and it looked like Toby and Bree had teamed up to dunk Wyatt. You've fed the kittens. You've salted the deer.
What?
I pointed at the pool. A parent-free house with a pool? They're never leaving now.
Well,
he said after a moment, leaning toward me and closing the space between our lounge chairs.
Will you be here too?
I will. I'm not leaving you alone with these freeloaders.
So then maybe it's not the worst thing, he said.
Well, I said, like I was really thinking about this. Maybe not. Clark smiled at me and leaned in for a kiss, at just the right angle for Birdie to enthusiastically start licking his face.
So does it come up in book two?
My dad asked as he rinsed off a plate and handed it to Clark, who carefully put it into the dishwasher.
You can't just drop something in like that and not have it pay off, right?
Well, Clark said, reaching for another plate, his voice coming out hesitant.
Do you really want me to tell you?
My dad looked at him, and I could see the struggle plainly written on his face.
No,
he finally said.
I'll just wait.
I think it'll become clearer in the second book, Clark said, transferring glasses to the top rack, one by one.
It seems to, for most people.
Oh, good,
my dad said, brightening as he turned the water off. I watched this from the opposite side of the kitchen island, still not quite believing what was in front of me. My dad and my boyfriend getting along. My dad had grilled hamburgers, Clark had brought a cheesecake for dessert, and we'd eaten outside on the back porch. My dad had given Clark a hard time at first, which he had partially deserved, since he'd gone out of his way to memorize obscure policies my dad had put through and minor floor debate victories, as though they were common knowledge. So, of course, my dad had pretended he wanted to talk in detail about these, asking Clark more and more questions, until I finally took pity on him and intervened. But after my dad had finished torturing him, they actually seemed to get along well, which I had not been expecting. And it meant I could put aside the talking points I'd prepared in case of awkward silences or lulls in conversation. I'd learned my dad loved John Wayne movies, and apparently Clark's grandfather had as well, so they had that in common. And, unfortunately, my dad told Clark about the time I'd try to run away from home when I was 4, and had walked all the way to the neighbor's house, knocking on the door and asking if I could live with them instead, because my mother was refusing to let me have the cookies I wanted. I should have known I wasn't going to get out of this dinner without an embarrassing story told about me, and I was secretly glad it wasn't the one about the time my mom brought me to my dad's first swearing-in, and I had a full-on tantrum on the floor of his office. And now, cleaning up from dinner, they were talking about Clark's books, making me realize that I really needed to read them, if only so I wouldn't be left out of any more conversations. When all the dishes were cleared and the dishwasher was running, my dad gave me permission to walk Clark to his car, but with a look that told me I wasn't fooling anyone.
You know it took you 2 hours to walk him to his car last time, so maybe you two need to increase your cardio or something.
Right, I said quickly, grabbing Clark's hand and pulling him toward the door, wanting very much to no longer be having this conversation. We walked together in the moonlight, his arms slung around my shoulders and my fingers threaded through his, the pulse in his fingertips beating against mine.
I think that went well, he said, after we'd passed out of view of my house, like Clark didn't want to talk about it until then, like my dad had supersonic hearing.
I think it did, I agreed, still a little shocked by this.
Except for all that Secret Service stuff. Do you think he meant it?
I bit back a laugh. My dad had started off the evening clearly trying to get in Clark's head, happening to casually mention that he knew some of the VP's Secret Service agents well. And did he know they were trained in all kinds of deadly force, not just firearms? He was just messing with you, I said, leaning my head on Clark's shoulder. He kissed the top of my head, resting his chin there for a moment before we walked on. So, I said, turning my head and looking up at him. Where were we?
Wasn't there a tavern brawl?
Isn't there always? I replied, and he laughed. I came back home a little over an hour later, Clark dropping me off in the turnaround, where we weren't quite able to resist making out for another 20 minutes or so. I let myself back in the house, half expecting that my dad would be in his office, watching the classic movie channel or reading a book. But he was sitting at the kitchen table, a half-eaten piece of cheesecake in front of him. Hey, I said, smoothing my hair down. I hesitated, then crossed the kitchen toward him. My dad looked up and smiled at me and pushed his plate slightly toward me. I decided more cheesecake was an excellent idea, and grabbed a fork before sliding into the chair across from him. I speared a bite, realizing suddenly how nervous I was.
What if my dad had been being his candidate self all night, pretending to get along with Clark while secretly hating him? I tried to tell myself it didn't matter what my dad thought, knowing all the while that it did. My dad was just calmly eating his cheesecake, like he had nothing to say, and I decided I wouldn't ask. I'd just wait for him to tell me what he thought of Clark, but it wasn't like I needed to know or anything. This lasted exactly one more bite before I blurted out, "So what did you think of him?" My dad rotated the plate slightly, looking for the perfect bite before he said,
"He seems like a very nice young man. A little mistaken as to where Stagecoach fits in with Wayne's filmography, but we can't have everything."
I rolled my eyes at that, not wanting to let my dad see just how relieved I was. "You freaked him out with all that Secret Service talk," I said, rotating the plate back toward me as I cut off a piece with my fork. "I think he thought you were serious."
"Who says I'm not? Though I suppose I didn't need to say Secret Service," he mused. "I could have just mentioned some of my old clients. Some very bad people would love to do me a favor."
I looked up at him, remembering something that had been in the back of my mind ever since the night of Birdie and the chocolates. "Hey, what happened to the drawing that used to hang in the foyer?" "The one of Stabby Bob." My dad looked at me, surprised.
"What made you think of him?"
"I was, I took a breath. "Clark asked me how you and Mom met." Something passed over my dad's face then. Sadness mixed with something happier.
"Did I ever tell you she wanted to invite Bob to the wedding?"
"No way." I had never heard this before and was starting to smile, even though there was a slight tremble to it.
"She did. She thought he deserved to be there, being the reason we were introduced."
"So, did he go?"
"Well, he was serving 15 to 20 by then, so no."
I smiled at that, and neither of us said anything for a moment, but it was like I could tell we were both thinking about my mom. Like just a little bit of her was here in the kitchen with us. My dad cleared his throat, then said,
"I can try to find him for you if you want. The drawing,"
he said quickly, maybe seeing what I was thinking.
"Not Stabby Bob."
I nodded. "That would be good." I took a breath, wondering if this was the moment to ask him the question that I'd never stopped wondering about. What he had done with my mother's Mustang. I hadn't asked 5 years ago when it didn't come to our new house with us, and I just hoped that he had saved it rather than sold it off to someone. I was getting ready to ask him about the car when my phone buzzed in my pocket. "Toby."
"Excited girl, concerned face, fork and knife, exclamation point, man with mustache, arrow, dog, question mark."
Toby clearly wanted to know how dinner had gone, but it was easier these days to call or video chat with her rather than text her. But then it buzzed again, and I saw Palmer was texting now too. "Palmer.
How did it go?"
"Let me guess,"
my dad said, picking up the cheesecake plate and pushing himself back from the table.
"Bree?"
"Toby," I said, shaking my head. "And Palmer, too." My phone buzzed again. "And now Bree."
"Well, I'll leave you to it,"
he said, placing the plate with at least 3 good cheesecake bites remaining in front of me. Then he patted my shoulder quickly, just once, before he turned and headed down the hall to his study. I watched him go, then picked up my fork, settled back in my seat, and wrote back to my friends. Chapter 11. I looked down at the dog sitting in front of me, a smallish, sandy-colored mix of some kind. This was a one-time walk,
His owners usually spent the summers away, but were back in town for just a day or two, and needed him to get some exercise. The dog looked back up at me, his tail thumping on the ground.
"Okay," I said, smiling at him as I made sure his leash was clipped on tightly. "Ready for this?"
I paused when I realized I'd blanked on his name. But in my defense, when I'd gone to pick him up, it had been a pretty chaotic scene. The dog had been running around, barking happily, seemingly trying to get himself as underfoot as possible. Classical music was blaring, and a girl who looked a year or two younger than me was doing a series of very complicated pirouettes in the kitchen, while a guy who looked like he was probably her brother sat nearby with a thick law textbook, seemingly unfazed by all of this, muttering about torts. It was a girl around my age who'd taken charge, giving me the dog's leash and instructions for where to walk him.
"Sorry about all this," she said loudly, trying to be heard over the music as she gestured behind her. "We usually spend the whole summer at our lake house, but my sister has an audition for a dance company in New York tomorrow, so..."
She shrugged, and I tried to hide my surprise, since the twirling girl looked like she couldn't have been more than 15. But I'd taken the dog and said I'd be back in about half an hour. Now I knelt down to see if his name was engraved on his tag, but there was just an M and his owner's phone number.
"Okay, M," I said as I straightened up again, hoping that when I brought him home I could give a report on how the dog did without having to use his name. "Let's do this."
The dog trotted forward, tail wagging, and I started walking him down the long, steep driveway toward the road. As I walked, I pulled out my phone, telling myself I just wanted to listen to some music, pretending that was the real reason right up until the moment I scrolled to my brand new audiobook section. I'd transferred the discs Clark had given me to my phone 2 days ago, but hadn't listened to them yet. It seemed like the time had come. I took a breath and pressed play, and the sonorous voice of a very famous British movie star filled my ears. "If it had not snowed on the second day of the Aspen Moon," he intoned, and I noticed, not for the first time, how everything sounded better with a British accent. "The life of Tamsin Castlereagh would have been quite different." I turned up the volume as I walked along with the dog, trying to pay attention so I didn't miss anything as I listened to Clark's story.
"Wow!"
Maya said, looking at me with her eyebrows raised. She glanced down at the pile of dogs at her feet. It was the three terriers again, the ones that were normally so hyperactive that my arm was always sore afterward from having to pull back against the leash the whole time. But now, they were flopped on the wooden floors of the tiny office Maya and Dave ran their business out of. I had been walking them nearby and figured I might as well stop in with them since I needed to get a set of keys for a new dog, and this way I could pick up my paycheck. All the dogs looked exhausted, and Tofu, normally the most hyperactive of them all, was starting to fall asleep in front of me, despite the fact that another dog was currently sitting on his head.
"It looks like they really got a workout."
"Yeah," I said, busying myself by folding up the extra plastic bags I kept in my back pocket, avoiding Maya's eye. "There were, lots of squirrels today." Maya nodded, and it looked like she believed me. My explanation was almost as rational as the truth, that I was currently devouring Clark's books, and the dogs I walked were feeling the direct effects of it. Once I'd gotten the hang of listening to the audiobook, it hadn't taken long for me to get swept up in the story of Tamsin, a rebellious princess who captured the attention of the Elder, the mysterious Yoda-like figure who lived in the woods on the outskirts of her kingdom. There was a prophecy, and since Tamsin fit the description, many, including herself, believed she was the chosen one, the one who would unite the kingdoms torn asunder by 100 years of war. I had my doubts about this, and the elder did as well, but he started to teach her anyway, as Tamsin's roguish brother Jack kept the kingdom more or less, oftentimes less, afloat, honing her abilities, especially her talent for communicating with birds. The first book had ended on a cliffhanger, as Tamsin and the Elder were forced to flee the kingdom, pursued with an invading army at their backs. I downloaded the second book immediately, and was already about halfway through it. I was listening to it constantly, in my car, in my room, before I went to bed, my phone propped up on my nightstand and a sleep timer on so I wouldn't miss anything. But the place I really loved to have the story told to me was while I was at work. There was something wonderful about being outside, moving, keeping an eye on the dogs in front of me while the rest of me was swept up in the story. As a direct result of this, all my dogs were getting much longer walks than normal, since I hated to stop in the middle of a really great part. The walks that were normally 20 minutes had turned into epic walks that took us all over town, and as a result, most of them were getting pretty wiped out. "Well, it sure looks like they had fun," Maya said as she bent down and scratched Banjo's ears. Banjo immediately flipped onto his back and looked at her expectantly. He was a fool for belly rubs. "Definitely," I lied, since I honestly couldn't have told her. Tamsin had been captured by the book's great villain, locked in a tower and separated from the elder. So the amount of fun the dogs were having had not been my primary concern. "So, here are the keys for the Wilson house," she said, handing them to me. "You got the email Dave sent you?" I nodded. Dave was beyond on top of this, making sure I had dog information and addresses and instructions, most of it laid out on spreadsheets. "I should probably get these guys back," I said, looking at the time on my phone and realizing I should have had them back an hour ago, and was going to have to hustle if I wanted to bring them home before their owners returned from work. Maya nodded, but then looked at me thoughtfully. "You've been doing a great job here, Andy," she said. I looked at her, surprised. "I mean it. I think you really have a talent for this." "Dog walking?" "Working with animals," Maya said, looking at me steadily. "Not everyone does. Certainly not all the people we've hired have it. But you do." I nodded, trying to process this. At the start of the summer, I would have said that it was just walking dogs, that anyone could do it. But now, I wasn't so sure. Especially after Toby came on one walk with me and spent the whole time freaking out every time Birdie sniffed a tree. Maya gave me a smile as she clipped her carabiner filled with keys back onto her belt loop. "So," I started, not even really sure what I was asking her. "Did you know you always wanted to do this? The whole dog and cat thing, I mean?" "Oh, no," she said, shaking her head. "Not at all. I was actually in business school, getting my MBA. That's where I met Dave." "Really?" The question was out of my mouth before I could stop it, and I hoped I didn't look as shocked as I felt. "I know," Maya said with an easy laugh, not seeming insulted by this. "Hard to believe, right?" "So what happened?" Maya smiled as she bent down to scratch Banjo's belly, and the dog's back leg started twitching like crazy. "At the end of the day, I decided I wanted to do something that made me happy." She gave the dog one last pat before standing up again. "And it's working out so far." I nodded as I clipped the Wilson keys onto my own key ring. Maya handed me my paycheck, we said our goodbyes, and I stepped out into the late afternoon sunlight, 3 dogs moving sluggishly behind me. But even as I tried to get the dogs to move, Maya's words were staying with me. The idea that you could rethink the thing you'd always thought you wanted and change your plan. It was almost a revolutionary concept. That you could choose what would make you happy, not successful. It was the opposite of everything I had long believed to be true. I looked back at the office for a moment, Maya's words still echoing in my head. Then I gave Freddy a pat on the head and pulled the dogs back out onto the sidewalk. Alexander Walker.
Andy, you okay?
Me. Fine. Alexander Walker.
It just sounds like you're crying. At 3 a.m.
Me. I'll keep it down. Alexander Walker.
What's wrong?
Me. I just finished Clark's second book. Alexander Walker.
Oh, boy.
Me.
How could he do that?
Alexander Walker.
I think there's ice cream in the kitchen. Meet you there in 10?
Me. Better make it 5.
What's going on?
Clark asked as I glared at him, taking the stairs to the diner 2 at a time, my arms folded tightly over my chest.
I'm not talking to you, I said, pausing at the ever-deserted hostess stand, looking around the restaurant, and seeing Palmer and Tom sitting a booth over from our normal one.
I started to head over to them, Clark following close behind me.
You're technically talking to me right now,
he pointed out, and I just glared at him again.
Hey,
Palmer said as we arrived. Tom slid out from where he'd been sitting across from her and walked around to sit next to her, doing an abbreviated version of his usual complicated handshake with Clark.
Hello, Palmer, I said pointedly to her.
Hi, she said, looking from me to Clark, clearly sensing something was going on.
Perfect timing, Tom said, drumming his hands on the table. He nodded at the mini jukebox at the end of the table. Because I put my money in like half an hour ago, and now you two will be here for my song.
What's happening with you guys?
Palmer asked, mostly asking this question to me.
Well, Andy's not talking to me, Clark said, as he got a menu from where they were pressed against the wall with the ketchup and salt shakers. I don't know why.
Oh, yes, he does. He knows what he did.
Palmer and Tom both looked at Clark.
What did you do? She asked.
He killed Tamsin,
I said, glowering at him while across the table from me, Palmer's jaw dropped.
You what? She gasped. Fictionally,
Clark explained hurriedly.
It's not like she was a real person.
Clearly not to you, I huffed.
You bastard,
Tom said, now glaring at Clark as well.
Wait, why are you upset?
Clark asked, sounding baffled.
Because it's all coming back to me now, he said, shaking his head at Clark. Really, how could you have done that?
Yeah, I said, turning to him. Was it all just a big joke to you or something?
After I'd eaten my way through a half pint of cookie dough ice cream, trying to deal with my grief about this, I'd left a series of pre-dawn texts on Clark's phone that had started sad and then had gotten more and more angry when I realized that all of this was his fault, and he could have prevented it if he'd wanted to. When he'd picked me up to go to breakfast, I'd crossed the line into refusing to speak to him.
Hey, remember when I said I wanted you to read my books?
Clark asked. He shook his head.
I regret that now.
You read a book? Palmer asked, looking impressed.
I did try to warn you, he said. I told you I wrapped up her story at the end of the second book.
I thought you meant you gave her a happy ending. Not that she died a terrible death in the highest tower.
I'm just impressed you read a book, Palmer said.
Technically, I listened to one, I admitted. She considered this for a moment.
Still counts.
So what now? I asked Clark, deciding that the time had come to start speaking to him again, especially because there were things I needed to know. What happens in the next book? And when do you think it'll be done?
Yeah, Tom said, turning to Clark as well. When will it be done?
Clark looked at both of us, and then dropped his head in his hands.
Not you guys, too.
Topher.
Hey.
Me.
Hey, how's it going?
Topher.
Can't complain. You around this weekend?
Me. So here's the thing. I'm dating someone. Topher.
Damn, you're a total heartbreaker this summer.
Me. Ha ha, no. It's the same guy as before. Topher.
Oh. Really?
Me.
Yep.
Topher.
Well, that's new.
Me.
It really is.
Let me see if I can do it,
my dad said, looking down at the six dogs I was holding, three leashes in each hand. His brow furrowed as he looked at them.
Fenway, Birdie, Leon, Duffy, Crackers, and...
His voice trailed off as he stared at the Pomeranian in front of him.
I don't know that one.
Bella, I said, and my dad nodded. But that was really close. I'm impressed.
You get good with that when you can't ever forget a donor's name, and you get brand new colleagues every 2 years,
my dad pointed out. I'd been heading out on an afternoon walk when my dad had wandered into the kitchen and asked if he could tag along. I'd hesitated before agreeing. What if he saw the reality of what I was doing and was disappointed that it wasn't more impressive? But had said he could come, which meant that I'd already suffered through at least 3 take-your-father-to-work-day jokes. Ready? I asked, intending this to be for my dad, but all the dogs looked up at me, tails wagging furiously.
I can take some, my dad said,
then took a small step back as he watched the 2 biggest dogs, Birdie and Fenway, lunge forward.
Maybe not all of them.
Here, I said. I separated out the leashes for Bella and Crackers and handed them to him.
Let's go.
We started walking, taking up most of the street with all the dogs. I'd gotten better at scouting new routes, looking for really quiet streets with ample trees and bushes. This was a new route, but I was already liking it. And so were the dogs, judging by the amount of ecstatic tree sniffing going on.
Do you remember?
My dad said, his words coming out hesitantly.
That stuffed dog you used to have?
I stared at him for a moment, trying to remember which one he was talking about. At one point, my stuffed animal collection had been vast. But a second later, there it was. My dad had given it to me when I was something like 6. A small, black, stuffed dog that came with its own leash. I remembered how thrilled I'd been to get it, how I had carried and dragged it with me everywhere for a while. Yeah, I said, looking over at him. Of course.
I was just thinking that maybe it was good practice for this,
he said, nodding at the dogs and their leashes. Was that a Christmas present? I was searching my memory, trying to recall the details. It was like one day the dog had always been with me, but I couldn't call up how it had gotten there.
No,
my dad said, looking offended.
Don't you remember? I had to go to that summit in London and brought it back with me. It wouldn't fit in my carry-on, so it rode next to me on the plane.
I smiled, fighting down a lump in my throat. How had I forgotten about this stuff? It was like I hadn't let myself remember it in years and years, that my dad had been more to me than the last 5 years. That at one point, we'd been really close,
and the dog he flew across the ocean with had become my favorite because it was from him. We walked without speaking for a few minutes, as I concentrated on making sure leashes weren't getting tangled and that everyone was getting along. It was a beautiful day out, sunny, but not too hot, and the street we were on was tree-lined, the sunlight